Thank you. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
There's no business like show business.
Oh, and away we go.
Hello again, and welcome to the Green Room. Have a seat. If it's your first time here, get ready to have some conversations about the... Oops, I'm sorry. I spoke too loud for Carol. Already reaching for turning the mics down. But anyway, have a seat. Get ready for some conversation about the art and business of community theater while waiting for your call. We're the groupies. We get some of our best ideas here and share information that you can use to make your community theater group the best it can be. Sometimes, of course, we slip into other topics. You understand how green room conversations go, but, you know, as a podcast dedicated to community theater and still the world's leading podcast dedicated to community theater, because I think we're still the only one.
Yay! But we're the only one that have persisted. That,
yeah. 119 episodes
wow.
now.
So.
Which means we're number one.
No.
Yeah.
119? Yeah. No.
Can you believe it?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Hey, and we're going to
Remember when we were 19, not 119.
19, we found so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, some would say that maybe we don't. But today we're going to do something a little different. Yeah, after 119 episodes, we found something a little different. Today is something we're calling Review-a-palooza. We have seen so many shows that it's time for us to kind of just catch up. We got a couple shows that Kathleen and Carol have seen, including Carol seeing it for the first time next to Normal, and Kathleen seeing it four times. So she loves that show, so we're going to talk about that. A show called Menopause 2. Mm-hmm. And once again, we have in the house with us Broadway Brian.
Dun, 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 dun,
who got
dun,
back from a trip dun, to New dun, York. Dun. And so we're going to hear from him on a couple plays. Two strangers carrying a cake through Manhattan, is that? Or through New York.
Yeah. Carrying a cake across New York.
Across New York, which oddly enough started in London at the West End.
The West End, yeah.
And Arthur Miller's classic play, Death of a Salesman.
I get goosebumps just hearing that title.
Yeah. Well, it is an American classic.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I want to start out today, though, with some sad news, and some of you may have seen it already on our Facebook page. But Jesse Jones of the Jones Hope Wooten playwriting team has passed away.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. She had a long illness, and she was only 75, which, 20 years ago, I would have said, oh, she lived a good life. But now it's like, oh, just too young.
Too young.
Mm-hmm.
I met her in Des Moines at the ACT Fest this past summer. And you can hear more about that in episode 101. But let me tell you, this woman was just so full of life and grace and humor.
Mm-hmm.
She is probably the most prolific, but she's one of the most successful playwrights, period. Mm-hmm. And certainly the most prolific woman playwright whose works are performed almost every day, or every weekend, I should say. Let me read a little bit from her obituary. Jesse Jones, playwright, actress, and a damn fine cook.
No.
She has made her final exit, stage left, leaving behind hit comedies, memorable performances, a recipe so delicious it would make your mouth jealous of your stomach.
Mm.
Witty, stylish, and exceedingly kind and gracious to all, she was the very definition of the word vivacious, and I can attest to that. It leaves us down one seriously fabulous human. Something you didn't know about her, though, because she was an actress before she became a playwright. From the 80s to 2005, there was rarely a television series on which she didn't appear. She had roles on Night Court, Newhart, Designing Women, Murphy Brown, a glorious role as the infamous Betty Hooley, taken on Candace Bergen's Murphy.
Yes.
Season 3, Episode 1. Check it out.
I remember that one.
Who's the Boss, Perfect Stranger, Fudge, with Florence Henderson. Grace Under Fire, Melrose Place, Judging Amy, Cold Case, and many, many, many others. She was also in TV movies, such as True Adventures of the Alleged Texas Cheerleading Murdering Mom.
I remember that.
Everybody's Baby, The Rescue of Baby Jessica, with Patty Duke and Beau Bridges, and the TV movie for which, some strange reason, she always received the most residuals, Wife, Mother, Murderer. And if all those acting jobs weren't enough to keep her busy, she penned episodes for the WB sitcom For Your Love and installments of the Emmy-winning children's series Teacher's Pet, starring Nathan Lane.
Oh.
She also taught acting to Playboy bunnies. She called it an act of charity. The art of writing comedies where she found her most enduring and certainly most explosive success. She co-created the Southern funeral comedy sensation Dearly Departed, which not only played off-Broadway but went on to do amazing business in theaters all across the country, with some theaters producing the play three or four separate times over the past few decades. She then co-authored the screenplay version of the hit Fox Searchlight film adaptation Kingdom Come, which starred Whoopi Goldberg and LL Cool J. And suddenly, Jesse was hip, baby. Yeah, this is fun obituary, if you can have such a thing, which is appropriate for her. Then, of course, she got together, started writing comedies full-time. She chose for her partners in the venture her best friend Nick, who has preceded her in passing, and the Southern-born and bred sitcom writer Jamie Wooten, who is also a wonderful person that I met this past summer as well. Together, they formed a writing triumvirate, Jones Hope Wooten, specializing in Southern-flavored comedies, and they became the rarest of playwrights, wildly successful ones. The Sweet Delilah Swimming Club, which used to be the Dixie Swimming Club, Red Velvet Cake War, Christmas Bells, the Savannah Sipping Society, 26 other titles, produced in every state of America as well as 25 other countries, entertaining millions of theatergoers all over the planet, and translated into many languages, including Japanese and Bulgarian. And they, of course, along the way, made lifelong friends and wonderful souls. And that one of the stories I tell back in episode 101 is how they would actually just surprise groups by going and showing up at their shows.
Really?
Yeah. And they talked particularly of going into one in Maine where they had to get a ferry. And they said it was like the whole town greeted them because it's just this little island with a community theater, and they greeted them and they sent them off, and when it looked like they weren't going to make the ferry, they made the ferry come back or something and get them. And
wow.
So they had some, yeah, it's, they lived a life that, or she lived a life that I think most of us could only dream about. Her motto was always making the world a happier place, with Ms. Jones leading the way. Between the Jones Hope Wooten comedies, Dearly Departed, plays by Jesse Jones have been performed well over 100,000 stages all over the world. Take that in. Catch your breath. Simply put, Jesse Jones was the most produced female playwright in America. Her remarkable body of work will live on and continue to bring joy to theatergoers for decades to come. So, standing ovation to Miss Jones. Like I say, I normally don't want to start things off with something sad, but because I had met her in person, though briefly, and they gave a wonderful seminar on playwriting, but this was just too much not to mention.
What an incredible life. What an incredible person. How lucky you were to meet her.
Yeah.
And
like I say, it said a long illness. So, I don't know how long, but when I met her, she was just so full of energy. It was just amazing.
Well, this long illness obviously didn't slow her down.
No.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I frankly would not have guessed she was 75. I thought that we were probably contemporaries. Which, you know, I'm so much younger, but it's a decade.
So you're a year younger than me.
But you know, I'm 10 years younger. So, that's where we're at. So, well done, Ms. Jones, and your plays will live on for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've seen several of them myself, and my guess is most of you out there have seen them too, and you may just not realize it. But
I just pulled up Dearly Departed because
I've seen that a couple of times. It's a funny show.
It's a big cast, but it looks interesting. Yeah. I'd like to read it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the Sweet Delilah Swimming Society. It's a comedy with heart.
Okay.
And the way they...
We love those.
If I remember correctly, the way the team works is basically the guys would kind of sketch in the plot points and get everything done, and then they'd hand it over to Jesse, and she would punch up the dialogue and finish up the dialogue, essentially.
Nice.
So they found a formula that really worked for them.
Yeah.
I kind of, just from the title alone, I like to read the Savannah Sipping Society.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of reading plays, of course, as you all know, how's it? Smooth segue right
that
there.
Was
it was
nice.
Very nice.
We didn't
very
even
nice.
Need segue. Sick.
We all still have our...
No bumps. I didn't feel a bump in the road there at all.
Our challenge to all our groupies out there to read at least one new play a month, and happy to say that we're keeping up with it. I'm holding Patricia's monthly report to next episode. because she is keeping up with it. And as our reporter out there in the field in Kansas, I imagine there's a lot of fields. Ha, sorry, Patricia.
Outstanding in her field.
You were doing so well with that segue, and then boom.
Downhill.
30 but, Helen say.
But, Brian, you read a new play.
I did.
Or a play. I don't think it's a new play. But
it's not a new play, but I did read a play. A new play to me.
Tell us about it, so, please.
Yeah, it's called Pen Pals by Michael Griffo, who has also done works called Material Girls, Apocalypse, and Vampire Vile Victorian.
Okay. I'm just glad I'm not the only one whose tongue is a little tied this morning.
Yes, no. Basically, this is the story of an extraordinary friendship between two ordinary women, Bernie from Newark, New Jersey, and a Margaret who lives in Sheffield, England, although she starts in London. And when they're both 14 years old and they correspond, they continue to correspond through five decades. And it is very, very much like love letters in the way that it's set up because they're both on different sides of the stage. And what they're doing is reading these letters that they have held on to for all these years. And they go through a lot, from first kisses to first times to first marriages to children to abortion to and it's all mixed in with their current history. Mags, or Margaret, but they call her Mags. Mags sends condolences to Bernie about the loss of JFK. I mean, it's so wonderfully just tightly written with an ending that just will make you sob.
Is this something that you could see doing as Reader's Theater?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that is, yes, you could. But unlike Love Letters, which we did not too long ago, a couple years ago now that I directed, you weren't in it, Kathleen, but I think David was in it.
I assisted with that one.
That's right.
That was my first assistance.
That's right. Yep. In that show, it's the author makes it very clear that the man and woman have to stay neutral. They don't not a lot of emotion. This is all about the letters. In this one, acting is very important. Mm-hmm. The emotions are very important. Mm-hmm. So there's a big change there between the two. So yes, it could be a Reader's Theater, but if in my opinion, the way that this play ends, mm-hmm. you wouldn't get the gravitas of mm-hmm. the moment if it's just a Reader's Theater.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Love Letters is by A.R. Gurney, mm-hmm. G-U-R-N-E-Y, and in case you wanted to check that out as well.
Yeah. So this is right up my alley. This is right up here to me with Steel Magnolias and Cemetery Club and Love Letters. I mean, it's my kind of show. Mm-hmm. I am happy to say as soon as I read it on the plane back from New York, I was bawling. Mm-hmm. It was great. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to say, no, I can't say it yet. Mm. I can't say it yet.
Because certain rights haven't been acquired.
Certain rights haven't been acquired yet, mm-hmm. is all I'm saying.
But production may be coming soon.
Maybe coming within the next year. Yes.
Unannounced maybe. Show.
An unannounced show. Very nice, Kathleen.
Rumors has it.
Rumors, yeah, rumors.
Rumors.
But I highly suggest it. It is very easy to stage. Mm-hmm. Which is very nice. And the way I look at it is it's two women, 50s, 60s, anywhere in that area, you know. But if you want to, if I were to someday direct this, what I would do is, especially if you have two weekends, is try and cast, if you have enough women that come to audition, I would cast more than one set and then give them each 2 days, one on the first weekend and one on the second weekend. That would be my plan if I were to ever direct it.
Even if you just got two sets, you could alternate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of versatility to this.
But it's I would not want to, if I didn't have to, I would not want to not give these actresses a chance, actors, female actors, a chance to do this because it's a beautiful, beautiful play.
Yeah. Well, so how many stars? I'm feeling that you give it like what? 5 out of 5?
I would give it 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5?
My only issue with it is... It's only
it is, you know, short.
It's only like 39-40 pages long.
Oh.
It's definitely almost a one act, I would think, but there's a lot of movement material that you can use in there. There's a lot of dramatic pauses that you can use in there, so you could probably stretch it out just a little bit. So.
I guess I'm flipping through the script. I can see that it is written in what they call an epistolary form.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering, how would you stage something like that? Because basically all they're doing is reading letters to each other.
Well, much like love letters. In love letters, they sat at the same table.
Right.
And they just read. In this play, what they suggest and what I would do if I were to ever direct it is each of them on different sides of the stage.
Right.
One of them, you just build a nice little, even just a couple of walls to represent a room with a table and a lounge chair or some kind of chair. And the other, the Newark, it would be like a simple tiny little kitchen set with a kitchen table.
Okay.
Because when it opens, Bernie from Newark comes in with a suitcase and she has her collection and she sits down and she begins to read, and then Margaret or Mags, as they call her, comes in and sits down with her tea and she begins to read. So it is pretty much done in flashback.
Okay, so it I'm picturing it as kind of a cross between a regular stage play and Reader's Theater in that there's not a lot of, I mean, yes, you have some set, but basically they're just sitting and reading the letters.
Just like love letters.
Yeah.
Mark Twain letters.
Somewhat like that as well, yeah.
Okay.
Except till you get to the end. And I don't want to reveal the end.
Right.
But when you get to the end, it's just...
Yeah.
Well, and there could be, based on how you're setting it up here, a little more movement. They might get up and read the letter.
Well,
they might turn.
Right.
Yes. And there is
more opportunity for expression.
Just
and
be at your spot by this line.
Right. And there are moments when one of them does leave the stage for a while.
Yeah.
Because one of the issues that is brought up is abortion. One has it and the other one doesn't believe in it, and so there is some silence there as the one keeps begging for the other to come back, sort of thing. So, I mean, there's a lot of there's a lot of powerful stuff, and there's some very funny moments. There's some very cute moments that make you just kind of grin once you get to know these characters as it builds and stuff. So, I told Kathleen the ending to it, so she knows how it ends, and it's pretty powerful. It's very powerful.
I'm very intrigued.
it's a great two women show. It really is. So I would give it 4 out of 5, other than I would like to have seen it a little longer. I would have liked to have seen them build the characters just a little bit more. But
you can build that in as you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So
wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I did what the El de facto captain told us to do. So I'm just saying.
Yeah, which reminds me, we didn't do a formal introduction of everybody in the green room.
No, we didn't.
Oh, my God. So
who are these
all about
people
that?
In the room?
Well, we kind of introduced ourselves, except for Bob, because as I was telling who's going to do what review.
That's true.
So Bob Yeoman is with us as well.
Yes.
So.
Hi, Bob.
I'm monitoring.
Yeah. It's a supervisor.
So we can go around the room.
Better than usual. Anti-monitor.
So today in the green room, we have...
Carol Slifka.
Oh, the late belated Robert Yeoman.
Kathleen McBee.
And Brian Burchett Ross, who's already talked too much.
And I am David Warr, the el de facto ringmaster of this little band of merrymakers.
I thought you were going to say merry misfits.
Either one works.
So for those of you who just joined us, our program's already in progress, but thank you.
20 minutes in, we introduced ourselves.
Hey, we didn't ask for a cover charge.
It's backwards, Dave.
Well, you know, the groupies out there, they all know who we are, so we're in good shape.
That's very true.
But if you're joining us for the first time, it might be confusing.
And hi, welcome.
Yep, welcome. And speaking of joining us for the first time, we have some folks who have just discovered our podcast, and we want to give a big welcome to them.
Oh, they are so lucky.
Another great segue, Dave.
Yeah, thanks. Gosh. I'm just filled with them today.
Were you up all night?
It's almost like I actually have a script. It's almost as we plan this. I want to welcome Rico Vasquez. I hope I'm saying your last name right, Rico. He's with Orange Community Players in Orange, Texas, which is on the Texas-Louisiana border, about halfway between Houston and Lafayette, Southeast Texas.
Hi, Rico.
The Orange Community Players, by the way, they're a nonprofit, volunteer-driven community theater. Not a surprise. Live plays and musicals. In fact, I think they're doing 33 variations right now by Moises Kaufman, which I'm not familiar with. It's actually, and we probably should look at it, it's an interesting sounding play that, of course, I've just lost on my screen here. Interweaves two stories of a modern-day musicologist with ALS researching Beethoven's composition of Diabelli variations and Beethoven's own struggle to create a work from mediocre waltz.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it sounds a bit deep, I think.
Sounds intriguing.
Probably to say. But Orange Community Players, they work out of a renovated cinema. Apparently there was some sort of closure, so they got their own building. And like I say, they're on the Texas-Louisiana border, which is interesting because we also got some other new groupies who actually started listening to us from episode one. And he's up to at least episode 17, hopefully further by now.
Hopefully.
Caleb Hensley.
Hi, Caleb.
And Lucy Andrus from Shreveport, Louisiana.
Oh.
So we are growing in that part of the country.
Louisiana. Yeah.
So the other one's on the border Texas and Louisiana, on the Texas side, and this is a little further upstate.
I love their music.
I don't know what they say.
I love the southern music. I love that. I love that deep south, that jazz.
What is that? Zydeco? Am I making that word up?
Sure.
But I like it, if you are.
let me look up.
That
just
good.
Swam up from my subconscious.
From Spelling Bee. Can you use it in a sentence?
No. I know. Let me see.
By the way, Monroe Community Players is currently doing Spelling Bee.
Oh, my God. I'm so good. Zydeco is a high-energy dance music genre created by French-speaking black Creoles in rural southwest Louisiana. Blending blues, R&B, and traditional Creole music. Okay, that was my shining moment for the day.
Very nice.
Shreveport, of course, is further inland. I don't know how much Creole they have up that way. They're away from the
Oh, it's
Gulf.
All over.
Don't steal my thunder.
Okay, I won't.
Okay.
But
too
late.
I know.
Too late.
But anyway, we've had a couple email conversations with Caleb. And so we're going to talk more next episode about that.
Okay.
Because he's proposes some interesting ideas. I think you're all going to want to join us in the next episode for. I always like to give that a little preview
tease.
From the next, that tease.
Yeah,
there.
The tease,
the hook.
So with that and of course, Buck, we haven't forgotten you. Thank you so much. And you know what you've done.
Hey, Buck.
Yeah.
Shout out to Buck.
No, but.
Sounded a little ominous.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what you've done.
I'm heading to Tennessee in May, Buck. Hopefully we can meet up this time.
No, Buck is a great friend of the show.
Yes, he is.
So
yes.
I'd like to mention him every now and then so he knows we haven't forgotten him.
I need to see what they've got playing, and maybe I can actually catch a show while I'm down.
Though I've learned I can't list everybody that we've heard from because I always leave somebody out, including family members. It's like, I gotta watch that.
Your brother?
So. No, my nephew. So Robert Bryant, you just got another shout out without even needing.
Well, your niece does listens too.
Yeah, I know she listens. Yeah. But Robert's the one I forgot when we had our 100th anniversary episode or whatever.
Yeah, but he didn't send us a great Christmas card either.
That's true.
Yeah.
Don't worry, folks. We're all lost.
We didn't get any Easter cards.
No, we didn't get any. We didn't get any Christmas cards.
We love cards, folks.
Last year,
P.O. Box 23, Monroe. Michigan 48131.
48161.
48161.
That's why we're not getting any.
I'm not actually.
That could be.
That could be.
Monroe, Michigan.
How long you been living here, Dave?
I don't live in Monroe.
That's true, you don't.
I'm from 49270.
That sounds like a Beverly Hills number.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now I'm going to have that song stuck in my head.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Next to Normal.
Let's
Carol and Kathleen saw Next to Normal recently, and I think they may have two different. I don't know. They're kind of staring at each other at daggers between the eyes, going forward.
Not daggers.
Not daggers. Okay. So take it away, ladies.
You've all heard me talk about Next to Normal before, how that show is near and dear to my heart, and just getting out of Silent Sky. They played for 3 weekends. And so fortunately, the third weekend, I was able to slip in. The music is by Tom Kitt, and the book and lyrics is by Brian Yorkey. It was done by the Players Guild of Dearborn, so I've seen multiple shows there. And so since Carol was done with Silent Sky as well, mm-hmm. and nobody likes to go to a show by themselves, although I have multiple times, mm-hmm. I asked her to come along. So the interesting thing about this particular time seeing the show for me is it was the fourth time I was seeing it, and it was Carol's first. So I thought it would be interesting to share both of our perspectives as someone that's familiar with the show and someone that is seeing it for the very first time. And Carol, do you want to start out? Or?
Well, so when Kathleen asked me about going to see it, I had heard of Next to Normal, but I knew nothing about it. I didn't even realize initially that it was a musical. Okay, I just knew that it had been an award-winning show, and I wanted to go see a show. So I went to see it. I don't even know where to start with this. Let me just preface this by saying that ever since we saw the show, I have been playing the soundtrack on repeat.
Really?
Really?
Yes. I absolutely
definitely
love the music. So much of the story is told, I mean, as any musical is, but still, so much of it is told through song. It took me a little bit of repetition to understand the whole concept of the show. When I first saw it, I thought that this mental illness that this woman had was something new. It was something that had just surfaced, and I thought, why is this surfacing after 18 years or whatever? Well, then going back and re-listening, I realized it is something that had been going on for a long time. The thing that I most was impressed with this show were the actors. Mm. I have got to tell you, I have never ever seen such a stellar ensemble in community theater ever. Mm-hmm. Especially listening to the original Broadway cast back to back, they could stand toe to toe with them.
Mm, wow.
Especially the young man who plays Gabe, the son. Mm-hmm. And I want to shout out to him. His name is Mohammed Mohammed. Mm-hmm. And he goes by Momo, I guess. And he was completely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. The range, the expression, the physicality, it absolutely just blew me away.
You wanted Mo.
I wanted Momo. Yeah.
You want Momo.
But yeah, all Momo. Of the
don't
actors
don't you look at me, Dave.
Were unbelievable.
Momo.
Yeah.
The choreography, especially in that first opening number where they're all kind of singing over each other and there's so much movement, was spot on. Mm. It was amazing. It was even, I think, a little more detailed and precise than when I saw the Broadway production online. Mm. Easily as well done, if not better. In fact, the gentleman who played the father in the Dearborn cast, who is Kyle Harwood, I don't know Kyle, he's not paying me for this, but I thought he was way better than the original Broadway cast guy.
Oh, wow.
The Broadway cast guy, his voice was kind of off a little bit, sometimes trying to be... He really reminded me of Kermit the Frog. I mean, seriously, oh, wow. I challenge you. Listen to the original Broadway production and listen to the guy who plays the dad singing. And if you don't think of Kermit the Frog, then that's on me because it was just...
Because it's stuck in there now.
Yeah. But this show was just phenomenal. I absolutely loved it. It hit really close to home for me. Had to detach myself a little bit from the show because there was a trigger warning that Kathleen had warned me about, and I thought I could handle it, which I could, but I did have to detach a little bit at certain times during the show because I didn't want to process it at that point. Mm-hmm. So I did process it later, and it was just amazing.
No, well, thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I was really excited to share the show with Carol, and when it got to intermission, and I looked over at her, and I'm like, "So, what do you think?" And she's like, "Oh my gosh, I think I'm watching an off-Broadway show." We had great seats. We were in row E, and let me just tell you a little bit about the director. The director had studied this show for 4 years in graduate school at the Roosevelt University.
Oh, wow.
So he had a strong passion for the show, and that definitely came through. Mm-hmm. We got to see it the third weekend, so they had just come off of a week of rest. We went on Friday night, but had 2 weekends under their belt. And let me tell you, they brought the energy mm-hmm. and the polish that I felt that this show had. And I think sitting closer, like I said, I've seen it 4 times. First time was when my son's school did it, Concordia University in Chicago. It was the very first time I seen it. Went in cold, you know, knocked me off my feet. If you don't know what you're going into, research it a little bit because it mm-hmm. is very heavy. Second time was Owens Community College. And then the third time was Croswell. Mm-hmm. And then this was my favorite.
And this one was where?
Dearborn Actors Guild.
The set Players Guild.
Yeah. Players Guild.
Oh, yeah. The set was incredible because both of the main characters were architects. I actually sent it to my son and said, look at the set they did for Next to Normal. And not just the acting, but the emotion.
Yes.
The reacting. The mother's expression on her face, you could read exactly what she was thinking at any time, no matter who was talking, you were connecting with her. They use the set so versatilely.
Yes.
Because it goes from doctor's offices to kitchen to, you know, she's in the daughter's in school and all these different things. So it's a cast of 6. And so it's not a huge cast. No, it's not a huge cast. A huge cast. This set actually had 6 entrances and exits. A front door, up the stairs to one side, up the stairs to the other side, a kitchen door, and a door under the stairs. So mm-hmm. I can send a picture of the set if you wanted to see it, because of course I did take a picture. How they use those entrances and exits and everything was just, when they sent me the email review, mm-hmm. where they asked for my reaction, I think I went on way too much. I exceeded all the words. So, definitely a show that is near and dear to my heart.
Yeah.
A wonderful message. It's a chance to step out of what you might be familiar with and see something from another perspective mm-hmm. and then be able to take that and apply it to your life and how you can take that new information. Mm-hmm. So,
I would expect that the entrances and exits and everything would be good. I'm reading here about Kayla, the director, and she got her master's in theater direction.
Mm. Oh. Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, a very accomplished cast.
I didn't even know you
could
get a master's in theater direction.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. You've seen it 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of this time compared to the other times?
This was my favorite.
Yeah. Did I miss that? Did you already say that?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, but that's okay. That's okay. Yeah. I think another thing about it was the very first time I saw it, I sat very close. It was a very small, college black box, mm-hmm. very sparse set. They used a lot of light to show the emotion. They used lighting excellently in this one, too. But the second and third time I saw it, I was much farther back.
Mm-hmm.
And then being back up close again, really being able to see the emotion mm-hmm. that these actors brought for the third weekend. And I think they knew this was their final, you know, right. run mm-hmm. at this, and right. they
put it
all. Yeah, they yeah. put it and, all out there.
And so here's what I think we should encourage all our audiences to do: they should come to opening night. And then they should come to closing night. They should see every show twice just to see what happens to the evolution yeah. of a show.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, every show is perfect from the get-go. But the reality is, and I think we've heard this with even the professionals in Broadway and stuff, is shows evolve over time.
Sure. Yeah.
As
sure.
people become more and more. The rehearsal process, you know, you learn as much as you can about your characters over that 6 to 9 weeks, whatever your process is. Mm-hmm. But it's doing the show over and over and over where you discover more and more and more about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Now, if you get to a point where people are bored with it, you got a problem.
Mm. Sure.
But as long as they keep digging into the work of the actor is never done, mm-hmm. even though the director, the choreographer, and the rest of us step back and say, it's your show, the actor's got to keep doing their work.
Well, adding mm-hmm. the input mm-hmm. from the audience, I think, is where you glean yeah, sure. more about your character. And they mm-hmm. see things that you didn't see, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, and they'll tell you where you're funny and where you're not.
Yes, yeah. they will.
Sometimes the cast will be and totally
were,
off.
There were funny moments.
There were funny yeah. moments in this, which is...
And their timing was great.
Yes.
In fact, there's a couple of lines that, again, I've been listening to this on repeat for weeks now. There were a couple of lines that Dearborn did, I thought, way better mm-hmm. than the Broadway, just in terms of timing and emotion and whatever. And, you know, Kathleen, you had mentioned the woman who played the mom, Diana, about her expressions and whatever. So going back again to the young man who played Gabe, he's very charismatic. If this kid doesn't wind up on Broadway, I'll be shocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was amazing. But that's what I noticed most about him. And all of them were good, but he was... For someone who is essentially playing someone who's invisible, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He was so involved in every word of that show, mm. whether it was any relation to him at all or not. The facial expressions, I remember him grabbing his hair at one point, just, you know, out of frustration and whatever, but just unbelievable. I would venture to say that is the best community theater musical performance I've ever seen.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many platforms did they have going up and down?
None.
Zero. But I don't count.
Any chandeliers from
yeah.
the...
I don't count that Utah thing as community theater.
Utah
I'm sorry.
Thing.
This show was strong enough on its own. It yeah. didn't need that.
That's yeah.
excellent.
And...
Excellent.
And that's my point, I guess, is that there were no special effects. Mm-mm. It was, even though there was an upstairs, a stairway, it was a very simple set.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
not very ornate. There were no big set changes.
No.
Everything happened in the same. It was all about the actors.
Yeah.
It was. It was.
And also the guy who played the doctor,
oh.
he was, there are, if you're familiar with the show, you know, there are parts where he breaks character because in Diana's mind, he's something else. And this it took me completely by surprise, but he was so good at his rock star
set.
Moment. Again, the whole cast was
love that.
Phenomenal.
Love
wow.
that set.
Wow.
Yeah, be sure to send us a picture. We'll post that
yeah,
on Facebook.
It was very interesting because at the opening of the show, the mom is waiting for the son to come home. So the yeah. show hadn't even started.
Oh, yes.
And she was on stage sitting there looking mm-hmm. out the window, going to the kitchen.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a start.
It's interesting that... when they do that, I've seen two of the shows that I've seen on Broadway in the last 3 years did that as well. When I saw Swept Away, the gentleman that was dying mm-hmm. at the very beginning, when they opened those doors for you to sit a half an hour yeah. early or whatever, he was laying there on his gurney
wow.
in the middle of that set, and he laid there perfectly still the
wow.
entire time. And then the other
pre-show
one,
nap,
yeah,
yeah.
and then yeah, you definitely you focus. And then maybe ever happily, maybe ever after, whatever that musical was that we just saw. There was that one too. There was a gentleman who was sitting there reading. He just sitting in his chair reading for the entire time that we were waiting for the show to start.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I like that. I like that a lot.
It took me a minute to figure out what was going on too, because it's pre-show. There's people leaning up against the stage, chit-chatting, and people are walking in and out and talking. And I see this woman up on stage, and she's got like a bathrobe on over her clothes, and she's walking around and picking stuff up. And I thought, what? Is she checking to make sure the props are in place? I mean, what's going on? And then when she knelt on the back of the chair and looked out the window, you know, and that's when I thought, oh, I think this is a character of the show. So it took me a couple of minutes. But yeah, that was a really interesting take on that.
Yeah, I like when they do that.
And for those that don't know, Next to Normal is, of course, by Tom Kitt, who did the music, and Brian Yorkey, books and lyrics. It won the 2010 Pulitzer for drama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, just doing some quick Google searches on the Google. Mm-hmm. I can't talk today. And as opposed to any other day. 2009 Tony Awards, three of them, you know, so it's a play. It's been around a little while now and very well acclaimed and sounds like very much so. So that is excellent. So before we move on to our next one, because I just wanted to make a little observation looking at the program from the Players Guild of Dearborn. They have ads for other groups in the area, in the Detroit area. What's interesting to me is we were talking before we had started recording today how many groups in the Toledo metropolitan area, because where we are, we sit between Detroit and Toledo, are doing Come From Away. Mm-hmm. Like, there's like six productions already scheduled. In the Detroit area, I'm not seeing any.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, if you go upriver, which is downriver, but it's north of us. But it's interesting. I'm not seeing that, and I'm wondering if it's because Come From Away was recently in toured in Toledo, and I think it was a year earlier in Detroit. So maybe it's lost. It's a little fresher in the Toledo market mind.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway,
it's interesting. I do see though. It's just kind of interesting. Some things that seem to be making a comeback is Good Man Charlie Brown. Saw that at a couple places. Calendar Girls, we know, is coming up. Kathleen will be talking about her experience in the next episode, I think. We decided to talk about that with Players Guild, but also it looks like Southgate's going to do that too. And
Beetlejuice
seems to be coming. Newsies is kind of coming around. So it's just interesting when I look at it. I was just surprised that what wasn't there versus what was. But that's exciting. So Next Normal, check it out if you haven't done it yet.
Amazing.
Congratulations to the Players Guild of Dearborn. Sounds like an excellent
production. Kudos to them. It was a great show.
Dearborn always puts on great stuff.
So let's move on to another show that Kathleen saw called Menopause 2.
Yes.
So is this an actual sequel to Menopause?
Menopause 2, this time it's personal.
Well,
I
did not see Menopause 1, so you know how they always say the sequel is not as good as the first. Well, I didn't have that problem because I didn't have anything to compare on the first one. So yes, so I'm sorry I didn't read any plays because I was doing Silent Sky and I was going to see shows.
And who was doing Menopause?
So Menopause was done up at Meadowbrook.
Okay,
and it was an actually senior bus trip that I went on with. I work at the Frenchtown Senior Center, so shout out to all my friends there. They love theater. We packed a bus of 50 people and had lunch and got to see the show up there. The only thing I don't like is they don't give out programs. I hate that. I hate that little.
Where's that at?
It was at Meadowbrook.
Oh, okay. So was that the school doing it or the?
The no, I don't know.
Oh, okay. I just wondered who was actually performing the show.
Oh, it was a traveling.
A traveling?
It's a cast of four. And I believe, I can't tell because I didn't have a program, that they had canned music. I don't believe they actually had an orchestra.
So it was a musical?
It is a musical.
Okay.
It's all very familiar music, which is...
Jukebox.
Redoes the words.
Okay.
So you're going to know, you're going to recognize the songs whenever they come up. Very simple set. It's four ladies that have been good friends that go on a cruise together because the one girl is a retired soap opera star and she sells some kind of orthopedic shoes, and she won this trip, or she got this trip, so she brought her three friends. Mm-hmm. One is a businesswoman. Another is an earth mother who's been with a gentleman for 27 years, but they never got married. And the last woman is a her husband passed away 3 years ago, and she took over their mortuary business. And so she's still clinging to her husband, actually brings his urn with her on the trip. So, and it's how these ladies evolve through this, their friendship and what's going on the trip. And they each have their little songs. And it would not be a hard musical to do because mm-hmm. it's only four people. Mm-hmm. And the set, they use the set really well. It's a ship, and the panels kind of slid in the back, so now it looked like one person's stateroom, and then it looked like another person, and then you're back to the Lido deck. Only the hard thing was when they did a little karaoke competition, they brought down all this glistening backdrop. That would be the only thing that would be might a little challenging, but very fun musical. Everybody loved it. Like I said, I didn't see one, so I can't say that it followed up well, but fun. High energy. The ladies did great. No intermission. Just breezed right through it.
How long?
I'd say a little over an hour and a half.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So a comedy most.
Mostly comedy.
Mostly
yes,
comedy.
Yes, all comedy. I mean, the one girl that her husband, well, not husband, her partner, is constantly calling her because he can't figure out how to put the toilet paper on the roll and all these different little things that I think everybody could kind of relate to. But it was a very fun show. Wow. So if you're looking for something musical and you don't even have to have an orchestra, maybe even the canned music, you don't need a big cast, you don't have a lot of space, I would check it out.
Hmm.
Okay, excellent.
That's interesting. I'm curious about Menopause One.
I know,
yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. It's like, huh.
But only four in the cast.
There was only four ladies in the cast.
Okay.
Yep, there was, you know, the captain's voice comes over the speaker, yeah. But, you
and of course, there
you
are
never
ladies
see
of
him.
A certain age, I presume, so... Do they Gavin have hot McLeod. Flashes Gavin on McLeod stage
yeah.
the whole time?
We talk about
Gavin
those. McLeod.
They talk
yeah,
about
they
them,
talk
but they
about,
didn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't suddenly they start taking their clothes off. Oh, my God.
That might have been a Menopause One. Maybe
okay.
they didn't want to repeat the same joke. I don't know.
Wonderful. Okay, good. Well, thank you. So Brian.
Da, 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 da,
off to Broadway again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So these are shows. So, well, Brian will talk about shows that are not available to us in community theater yet. But,
no.
Well,
one has been around
one is
forever.
Very
oh,
forever.
Yeah, that's
around
true.
Forever.
Yeah. Yeah, we had it. We did a very quick trip to New York last month. Because I had actually was able to finally, after years and years, acquire tickets to go see a taping of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
Ooh. So dope.
So that's the only reason we went, because when they say, here's your tickets and this is the day you have to go, you don't, it's not an option. You just get on the plane and
yeah.
go, okay.
Yeah.
But we did get a couple other shows in. The first one is called Two Strangers Carry a Cake Across New York. It is a musical. It came from London's West End, where it was hugely well received. Now, I'm not sure if the lady here came along with it from London, okay. but I do know that he did. And his name is, hold on a second here, folks. I've got like a million things sitting here. His name is, first of all, he was just absolutely amazing. I mean, really, really amazing and funny and touching. Sam Tutty, T-U-T-T-Y. Her name was Christiani Pitts. They were both good. They were both excellent, actually. But it's basically the story of this young man who goes to New York because his father's getting remarried, and he's never met his father, and it's just been him and his mother. And he meets the soon-to-be wife's sister, and they're the two that carry the cake. But there's a lot of unresolved history between the sister, between the female lead and the sister, and there's a lot of unresolved between the father and the son. So on the surface, it looks like, and it's very funny, but on the surface, it looks like it's a real, this is very lighthearted and blah, blah, blah. But about halfway in, you start going, oh, no, there's a lot of issues here. Mm-hmm. And so by the end, it's my kind of show, because does it end happy? Not really. Doesn't end sad, mm-hmm. per se. But it doesn't have that, oh, look at us, do-do-do-do-do, ending. And I love that. It's just a moment in their lives, and then it's gone. And I love it.
Now, does the cake make it all the way through, or is that a spoiler?
A spoiler.
You know, the funny part about that is the cake, carrying the cake, is only a very brief moment in the show.
Oh.
It's not them carrying the cake for the entire 2 hours and 15 minutes.
See, I'm envisioning a madcap comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Oh, we lost the cake. Where's the cake?
That's what I envision too. And no, it's
wedding dress.
It's more, the cake, I think, is more symbolic, to be totally honest. But most of the cake survives.
Oh.
Most of the cake survives.
Well, I'll give you that way without having a little piece.
How big of a cast?
Two people.
I was going to say, it's just
the two of them.
And this is not a musical.
It is a musical.
It is a musical.
Oh, definitely.
A two-person musical.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I kind of like the music. And nowadays, for me to like, I think the last time I've actually enjoyed the music of a musical to the point where I wanted to get the CD was Shucked. Mm-hmm. That I liked the music for. But I know, Carol's...
I'm rolling my eyes.
Yeah, but...
I liked Shucked.
I did, too.
It was okay.
Oh, whatever.
It was hee-haw.
Sometimes you need okay.
Yeah, you need fun.
It
you need
hee-haw
like...
hee-haw meets the Music Man.
Yeah, okay, I'll go with that.
Okay.
But it was okay. I thought it was fun. But anyway, I will tell you that the set was both simplistic and... not simplistic, and it was amazing. Basically, it was all these
birthday cakes.
No, suitcases.
Oh,
they're all suitcases. And
is that in the round?
Oh,
and it's in the round. You've got two turntables, one going one way and one going the other. Throughout this entire thing, which works really well when, as you can see, this was how it was before. I'm going to send this to Dave so he can post this.
Cool.
But that was basically what you saw when you came in. That was the pre-show setup. It was one suitcase spinning around with all the others. What was fascinating, I loved about those suitcases was that they used them in so many ways. When they were walking through the city, these suitcases lit up. They had lights. They had lights all in them, around them, sort of thing.
So it looked like a skyscape.
So it looked like a cityscape.
Yeah.
When in certain scenes, when they're walking through the city, it's all white lights, mm-hmm. and it looks like they're walking through the part of the
Funny.
City. When he gets to his hotel room, he opens up one of the suitcases. It comes down. It's a bed.
Oh.
When they go to a Chinese restaurant, they open another suitcase, and here comes a table folded out with all these Chinese decorations on the inside.
How clever.
It was a really cool sort of thing. And they had this beautiful song at the end where they're both standing on either side of the tops of the suitcases, and it's spinning, and they're singing to each other. Great stuff. I loved it more than I thought I would. This was a husband show. Mm-hmm. My husband wanted to see this, and I thought, all right, this is one of those happily ever after. Blah, blah, blah. I couldn't have been more wrong. And so I really, really, I liked the music a lot, and the set, but and the two actors, and he was just amazing because he made you fall in love with them, mm-hmm. And that's pretty impressive when you can get someone to invest, you know, an audience to invest that much. But I'm trying to think of the down. Is it a play that community theater can do? I guess I would say maybe if you had the people to do the set to be able to pull off those suitcases, because to me that's an intricate part of that show.
Yeah.
When they would change clothes, because she worked at a bistro, she, you know, bring down a suitcase and there's your thing, and then open up a little tiny suitcase and there's, she pulls on her little work thing and then takes it back off and shuts that suitcase. So that's the sort of thing that I think would be more. And then, of course, it really works in the round. And then you got to have the suitcases light up. I mean, I guess there's ways around all that.
I would say, I guess the question would be what the script actually calls for.
Yeah.
My guess is it doesn't actually call for that set design necessarily.
And possibly not. And
certainly not around turntables and stuff.
Yeah. But the turntables, I think, truly added to this one because there was a lot of them walking. They walked through Brooklyn. They walked through the Bronx. They walked through Manhattan. So, you know. And
so it let them walk.
Well,
yeah. Exactly, without having to move.
Well, and so. when you go to New York to see a show, you're expecting a little more over
yeah, you
the
are.
Top.
You are.
Know? Especially for the price of ticket.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So I think if it ever comes out as community theater for community theater, it definitely can be done and probably in a very different way, and I don't think it would detract from the story at all. Mm-hmm. But boy, if you could pull off that type of a set, the way the lights all changed in the suitcases, and when they're when they're in a bar, they're all this green and reds, and it was awesome.
The story stood well on its own, and this added
extra a lot.
Layer to it.
Yeah,
yes.
It added
That's
a lot
cool.
to it. So,
maybe for everyone's 2035 season.
Yeah. I think that's a good
when you start thinking about the projection. Well, because it's got to finish on Broadway, really, and then it's got to go tour, and then it's, you know, all
exactly
got to do.
I don't know if I could ever see anybody else doing it as well as this gentleman. Of course, he was the one who originated the role too.
Okay, so he's been doing it a while.
He knows where the jokes land and how to land them and the whole bit. So, but no, it was an amazing show.
Okay, wonderful.
Loved it. I would give it an A. I'd give it a solid A.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, of course, we saw Brian, you saw a classic.
Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman.
Ooh. Michigan's own Arthur
I had
Miller.
To fight for this one.
Now, you've seen this one before.
No.
I've never seen clips.
I've read it in college. We read it and analyzed it and had to do, you know, what you do in college. Mm-hmm. I do your papers and all that. But I have never seen, I've seen clips. Mm. I've seen clips of different groups doing it. But to sit down and actually see it. And, of course, our own Mr. Bob Yeoman has played Willie Loman. Yep. And I have never heard anything bad. I've only heard great things about what Bob did.
And it's not a musical.
No.
Kidding.
That would be interesting. Let's somebody write the musical.
Well, you know, they're bringing
salesman.
Things back.
Dad, I know what you did. It actually had several stars. Big name celebrities. Nathan Lane played Willie Loman.
I've heard him.
This is a new role for him.
Yes. Laurie Metcalf played his wife, Linda.
Ooh.
We've seen her do other dramatic things.
Yep. So. Ben Allers played Happy, the one son. And if I don't know if any of you have ever seen this TV show on HBO Max called The Gilded Age. But he's in that. He's very young, but he's very, very good. He's an up-and-comer, I think. Christopher Abbott, who I know I've seen before, played Biff, the older son. And very interesting, one of the actors who played the younger son, the younger Biff, was Joaquin Consuelos, which is the son of
Kelly Ripa and
Mark Consuelos from the thing, who went to, he'd just come back, he just graduated from U of M. So there's a little bit of a Michigan tie there, too.
There you go.
Apparently they have a house somewhere here in Michigan.
I say a couple of Michigan ties. Arthur Miller, I believe, went to the University of Michigan as well.
Did he?
There's a theater named after him up on the campus there.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, we went into it because I wanted to see. First of all, I wanted to see it done on Broadway. Second of all, I'd never seen it before, and I thought, well, what a perfect time. And third of all, I thought, I want to see if Nathan Lane can do this. Because we all know, I've seen Nathan Lane in dramatic parts, and he's good. But even the dramatic parts I've seen him in, he plays a gay man. Mm-hmm. So I've never seen him do a, quote, straight role before, especially something that dramatic. And he was excellent. Wow. He was absolutely excellent. But Laurie Metcalf. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I want to be her best friend.
Oh. Mm. She had you by the throat every time she opened her mouth. I mean, she felt, and you know, you looked at her and you went, oh, there's Laurie Metcalf. There's Roseanne's sister and Sheldon's mom. But it did not take long to just forget all of it. Because she was just this beleaguered. Yeah. And her speeches to her son just, tore us up. Mm. It was excellent. The set, the set was extremely minimalistic.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was like an abandoned car lot. Warehouse.
Like a abandoned subway or something.
Yeah, well, it was a car. It was like
a garage. A warehouse.
And it had one card table, a few folding chairs, and a couple of benches that they used, the boys used as their beds in the bedroom.
Probably, except for what they did there. But, I mean, just using those few pieces, that's a lot less than I've ever seen.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm. Now, here's the fascinating thing about it. We didn't realize this until we're halfway through it. Because people are coming into the sides. And the lighting was very Steven Spielberg. It was the lights were coming in from the back of the people. So, you know, when they're entering and exiting, you get this sort of, Spielberg thing, which was cool. But and folks, we're going to post this so that you guys can know what I'm talking about. These pillars.
He's showing us a picture on his phone of the stage of pillars.
Of pillars. They had elevators in them.
I love elevators.
Like dumbwaiters, you mean?
And the people came out of. But they always came out of the back. So suddenly you never – some of the exits and entrances were off stage.
Okay.
And then suddenly here's a character shows up and he just turns around from the pillar. And there he is.
Oh.
And so you never see –
And then he turns back to the pillar and then he's just gone.
They're lifting him up from the bottom.
Yeah.
Gotta love having traps and elevators.
And then as the show opens, the big garage door in the back opens up. Two car lights hit you, and here's Nathan Lane driving the car right onto the set.
Oh, cool.
And it stayed on that set the entire time. It was utilized.
And it's a period car.
Huh. And it's a period car. Yeah. And I'll send that one to you as well. In fact, people, the first time the kids, the young Biff, young Happy came out, they came out of the car. Mm-hmm. And this was like a third, and then suddenly, and they go back in the car. The woman that is very important in the show, she pops up in the car. Mm-hmm. And then she goes back in the car. And you never see her again. And it's like, so David and I, as much as we were gripped by this fascinating show, we're like,
just watching the
difference. Where did she go? I mean, we're looking at the bottom of the cars. We were four rows in.
Ooh, wow.
Four rows. Yeah, I went and touched the stage. Because that's the other fascinating.
Don't touch.
Somebody else had to as well, because it was so fascinating. But they had taken and cement, they had poured cement and extended. They tore out the first two rows, actually, and extended that stage. And it was real, I want to show you again.
Real cement?
It was real cement. Mm. This was real cement.
Oh, my gosh.
That they put on that stage.
Well, still must have been a thin layer because the weight, I would think, would be...
They've got some structure underneath it.
You can see the metal.
They probably got the rebar
But yeah. I'm saying that's
Again,
that's
for those of you
block.
Listening, Brian is showing us a picture on his phone of about a 10-inch
and you will see,
slab
you will
of
see
cement
those,
coming out from the front of the stage.
I love the minimalistic... and it was so different from what we had seen the night before.
Yeah.
It was just basically the chairs, the table, and some benches. Even when there's a moment when the mother receives a phone call from one of the sons, the phone just rings, in the air, and she just sits down and goes, "Hello? Hi, Biff." And she has a conversation. She doesn't hold a phone in her hand. She doesn't. Yeah. It's just, and you automatically know. It's like she's on the phone.
So how do they handle the boys' bedroom? I mean, so they don't have an upstairs, obviously.
No. They just have this desolate thing. They had one little refrigerator along the side where they would put stuff in and out. Other than that...
Did anyone come in and out of the refrigerator?
No one came in and out of the refrigerator.
Missed opportunity.
But the benches...
Did the lights work on the refrigerator?
Yeah, it did, actually.
I bet you did.
The benches were their beds, and they just were on either side. And they would just lift up and start talking to each other.
So that's something for any group that's sitting there saying, oh, we're going to do death salesman, but we got to build a two-story house.
No.
Obviously you don't.
No. You don't, because this is about the characters.
Well,
this
again.
Like you said, this is about the actors and the characters.
This script is so strong. Everything else is just extra.
Now, I looked it up that night when I got home, but I put because I said, what was the idea behind this set? And they said they chose, directed by Joe Mantello, designed by Chloe Lamford, it moves away from the traditional realism to create an impressionistic industrial and purgatorial space designed to reflect the inner mental state of Willie Loomis. It's a cavernous industrial space.
Translated, it means we paid so much to Nathan Lane and Laurie Metcalf, we didn't have a budget for a set.
Yeah. I don't know.
A little wine goes in, a little truth comes out.
I will say, I did get a cast picture at the end.
Oh, what a wonderful picture.
And so that's the niceness of being
never
that close.
Seen Nathan Lane with gray hair.
Yeah, he was great.
Wow.
So, I cannot say for sure. I mean, obviously, because I've never seen every production of Death of a Salesman on Broadway or anywhere else. I wouldn't say, wow, Nathan Lane was probably the best Willie Loomis that ever walked across Broadway stage. But I'd say he was probably on par with the best of them. But Laurie Metcalf and the one who played the younger son. Those were the two that really, really, really impressed me. And that's an A+.
So these two shows you saw, did they both get standing ovations at the end?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, yes.
I say you've never seen the production with Al Lewis, the Munster's grandma.
The Munster's, no.
Willie Loman. That was probably just, I'm kidding.
Did he ever actually do that?
He may have, who knows. I know he played Suitless once.
Yes, he did. I saw that picture not too long ago. Yeah. It shows to me that Death of a Salesman shows, like you just said, you don't need to focus on the set. You don't need to focus on, do we have the right phone for the right period? If you have the actors that can pull this off, you can just throw tables, benches, and chairs up there, and you know, it'd be nice to be able to drive a 1958 car in, sure. But
the parking fees alone.
I say New York City.
I know, but
Manhattan, no less.
But I mean, you know, they stripped it down to give it to the actors, and the wonderful actors knocked it out of the park.
Well, I would say, as Carol and I just directed Sun and Sky, and I would say that was one of the things we came across with as we were looking at the set, because I had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clear that we weren't going to get to that vision, so we started making what I think were compromises, but I think they ended up actually making the show stronger.
I think you're right.
Because, again, people don't need to see all the desk and all the books and all this. They just need to have the impression that they're there, and they will fill in the gaps.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, as long as you got strong actors and you got a strong script, you're ready to go.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you're not putting anything up there that distracts them and makes them question, like,
right.
What?
And every now and then that happens, even in a very excellent production. And I'll talk about that actually next episode as well.
Ooh.
So many teasers.
I know. Teasers. He has been a big teaser.
Put it on your calendar, folks.
Yeah, two more weeks.
Two more weeks
for you guys.
Yeah.
And about 10, 15 minutes for you guys. For these guys.
But great. Well, yeah. I'm glad. That sounds very illuminating. And certainly glad that you got to see those two great actors.
And it was 3 hours. And he started at 7, it ended at 10. And you know what? I was, Kathleen's jaw just dropped when I said 3 hours. And when I looked at my watch when the show was over and saw that it was 3 hours, my jaw dropped because I went, that couldn't have been 3 hours.
And
because
that's how you tell it's a good show.
That's how riveted you were.
That's just, you know, our eyes were just.
Yeah. No intermission?
Oh, yeah, there was an intermission. Okay. So, yeah, I guess it was 2 hours and 45 minutes, maybe. Yeah, but still. But still, that's a very
3 hours is a long time for some of us of a certain age to sit for.
I know you've touched on it just quickly, but before you went to see this, you were your biggest concern was whether Nathan Lane could pull this off.
Yes.
And no question of that, no problems
no,
with that?
No, okay. None whatsoever. There's another effect, but no, none whatsoever. Like I was just saying, I don't know if I would have said, oh, he was probably the best Nathan Lane that ever walked Broadway, but he definitely,
Nathan Lane.
He is the best Nathan Lane.
He is the best Nathan Lane. No one will ever be a better Nathan Lane. The other thing is at the end with the cemetery scene.
Yep.
All of a sudden, and we're four rows back on the side. We weren't in the center. We were on the side. So we're seeing it from a different angle, you know. And Nathan Lane came right down to that one corner when he's doing his garden thing. I mean, he was as close to me as that chair over there with the coat on it.
Wow. That's afraid.
So it was like, you know, but when they did the cemetery,
he's indicating a distance of maybe 10 feet.
About 10 feet. But there was a moment when they did the cemetery scene, it was like it kind of went black for a split second, and then it comes back up, and everybody's already standing over this grave, and it looked like a fresh dug grave. And they must have brought it up from below, but it was just like dirt everywhere, and they're throwing the dirt on there, and it was, I'm just like, my God.
Carol, can you imagine it? Marley's grave.
Yeah. Oh, God. You had to ruin it for me.
Actual dirt.
And there goes Carol. She just walked out.
Or Scrooge's open grave, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, are we talking about Christmas Carol already?
No, we're not.
Not if Carol and I have anything to say about
it. No, that would be a hard no.
Well, thank you so much, Broadway Brian. Good to have you back.
Yeah,
wonderful. And that pretty much, folks, wraps up our review of Palooza. So once again, we want to thank everybody out there for listening and tuning us in. We really appreciate it. We love hearing from you, so don't forget to drop us a line at Monroe, I don't even know where we're dropping this line at, mcppodcast@monroecommunityplayers.org. And of course, to keep up with the latest shows and activities of the Monroe Community Players, go to monroecommunityplayers.org. Find our Facebook page. We got an Instagram page. Search Green Room Groupies. Search the art and business of community theater. I think you will find us now.
Search for Spock.
Don't search for Spock. We aren't good with Spock. We do release 2 episodes a month.
Kind of a dead subject.
So take a moment to subscribe, like, otherwise rate us. Help spread the word that we are here. The Groupie Nation keeps growing, and we just love it. The Art and Business Community Theater is presented by Monroe Community Players, recorded at the Monroe County Library's Ellis Branch Podcast Studio, overlooking the historic River Raisin, which was once seen by Stephen Colbert, who did some recording at what is now known as Monroe Community Media. So there's another little
there
Michigan
is a little
tie
bit of connection there, yeah.
To you're going to the Tonight Show with, or Today Show, whatever.
The Late Show.
Late Show. One of those shows.
I can't keep them all straight.
Yeah, Late Show.
Another little tie there, and Monroe Community Media, who also help us distribute this show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Goes without saying that all opinions expressed during this podcast and those of the individual expressing them and no one else. So once again, for the love of theater, we are the Groupies, and we will see you
in the green room.